Voyage Guide to the Galaxy podcast. The official podcast of GalacticVoyage.com. We talk about Star Wars.
Fanboy style.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
These Federation types are cowards. Negotiations will be short.
It's time for a Clone Wars discussion.
They never even ask me any questions.
Why did you discuss this to committee?
Alright, let's move on to Lethal Trackdown.
Alright.
The quote at the beginning of this episode is, "Revenge is a confession thing." That starts out inside of the Slave One when Boba gives Killian and other clones some water. And then they get in like a fight and then Aura comes in. What do you guys feel about that scene?
Well, he shows generosity towards them, but doesn't really want anything to do with them. So it kind of confused me in a way, because, he tries not to identify himself with these people, but he's helping them.
Yeah, I always saw that as he's in between not caring at all about them or their fate, and really wanting to set them free. And that has always been, to me, an indication that he's still adjusting to this lifestyle. So when he gave them, you see it sometimes in the movies where you have a hostage situation. One of the guards, for example, will start talking to a prisoner, and that is, in movies and TV, that's supposed to be your indication that this guard is either going to help the prisoner or not stop them when they escape. I mean, that's sort of a way that movie directors and television directors try to get you to see that somebody is changing their mind about the whole situation. And that worked here, because Boba, I think in any ways, it's unrealistic to assume that right now he is the same person that he will be in episode 5.
Yeah.
He's just not at that point yet.
Yeah.
So you can't, and this has bothered me. People have been saying, I didn't like it when he didn't kill this clone, when he brought them water, He's not Boba Fett of episode 5. He's not going to be that cold-hearted. He's going to have moments where he's just a kid. And this episode did a good job of showing that in a realistic way that at least I personally could accept and believe.
Mm-hmm. And it really kind of showed the contrast between Boba and Aura, when Boba, gives them water and then Aura just turns around and, beats him up.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So, let's see, Eric Boggs, what'd you think of that?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I'm glad that Boba's not just some kid sitting around torturing, nerfs or any of that. Like, they find him on some random planet, killing baby nerfs. I'm glad it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
I'm glad he was a normal, regular kid.
Mm-hmm. And then when we get to, back to Anakin and Mace, they're wearing the back-to-tank robes. What'd you guys think of those?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't give the robes much thought. I was focusing on the conversation because, I don't know. I don't know how much significance the robes were supposed to have. What did you guys think?
Well, I just thought it was different because they've always been in the same exact, uniform through the whole series. And we haven't seen much change in their costumes.
I think by the end of the series, they're going to go back to the traditional Jedi robes from the movies, or they're just going to keep the...
Yeah, I think they're just, hinting at we're going to change the costumes from every now and then. Just a thought.
I think they'll wear this till the end of the war, because this is sort of the war uniform.
Yeah, but there has to be some transition between what they're wearing in Clone Wars and then what they're wearing in Revenge of the Sith.
Right, I mean, they'll probably, at the very end, they'll change... last five episodes they'll start changing, but I think for the majority of the series they'll be in these outfits, just because if you were going to war you wouldn't wear what you would wear during your daily walk through the temple.
Yeah.
You think Ahsoka would wear something a little more protective though, wouldn't you? Like her whole torso is open for attack. I don't know.
But she uses more, agility and, more, speed. And so I'm sure that she wears, you know, not that much stuff, so she can move around quicker. That's just how I figure it. All right, let's talk about Boba's failure to kill Pons. So, I mean, it's what we just talked about. You know, he's not like the other bounty hunters, at least not right now. He's not like Boba from Empire Strikes Back. You don't have to tell him no disintegrations right now. And maybe, I'm just throwing it out here, maybe that his failure right now is what makes him a better bounty hunter later in the long run. You know, he's kind of calm and collected, where Aura Singh is just a raving lunatic.
He sees that. I mean, that's, like, I agree, because in this case, he didn't do it, and where did that get him? He got caught. Mm-hmm. So his thinking afterwards, at least in my mind, his thinking would be, why do I, you know, risk my own safety by not killing somebody, by not going through with this action that I may not like? I gotta suck it up. I've just gotta do what I need to do to get my job done and to look out for my own. And that fits with him later. I mean, he doesn't think twice about killing if it's what the mission requires. I mean, that's the difference between just a cold-blooded killer and a bounty hunter, is that a bounty hunter will only kill people when that death is needed to further the mission. He's not just shooting randomly. And often, if you just start killing people randomly, you can mess up your mission. You can get caught. You can get more attention from law enforcement. So later on, you see Boba being really smart about this, and I believe that stems in part from what we saw in this episode.
And what you just said, like, drawing more attention, when Aura killed
Kostas... I don't think Aura was a...
What's that? Lunatic. All right, when Aura
killed... I don't think she was a lunatic. She was just trying to get the job done. She's a bounty hunter for probably most of her life. I think she knows what she's doing. I just think she's doing the job and trying to get Mace to come to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think actually Aura Singh is now what Boba Fett will become. I don't think that there's a big difference between her now and Boba Fett of Episode 5. And that's actually, to continue what I was saying, that is what Boba eventually becomes. It's not that he looks at her and he says, and later on he says, I will never be that. It's that now he doesn't agree with it, and that doesn't work out, and eventually he goes back to being like the people he was around, including her.
Uh-huh. Well, I can sort of see that. So, what else do you have, Eric? The other Eric? Eric Boggs?
Probably Castus's decision to drop out when they reached Florum. That was a real pansy move. He would have stayed alive if he didn't do that, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they threw that in so that Aura could kill him, because she hasn't really killed... I mean, besides the clone, she hadn't killed anybody that we had gotten to know, even for a whole episode, or for most of one. So they had him chicken out to set up Aura as a real, just a cold-blooded person. Because she didn't need to kill him. And that goes back to what I was saying before. She didn't need to, unless, of course, you know, or rather until she figured out that he was going to sell them out. And that's when she decided, this isn't worth it. He's a dead man. And that helped define her character more. I think it would have been a different finale if Castus hadn't dropped out and Aura hadn't killed him.
Yeah, and also what you were saying before, like, drawing more attention to yourself. I think that, I mean, if Aura never shot Castus, then that one alien in the cantina, his friend, would never have said anything, and then Ahsoka wouldn't have found them.
Right.
So, yeah.
But on the other hand, Castus might have sold that information and gotten them caught anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. She did draw attention to everything and really bring it all down by shooting him.
Mm-hmm. What about the cantina? Not the one on Florum, but the one in Coruscant.
Well, before the cantina, there's something I gotta say. The security droid at the, like, when they first enter the underworld of Coruscant, the security droid says, "Your pass, please," in a very monotone voice that reminded me a lot of THX 1138. Were you guys reminded of that at all? from that part, that scene.
I didn't get a THX feeling from it, but I definitely got the sense that, like, you know, this is just a routine, and you imagine that people are conscious. Like, you know, it's like the subway. There was a sense of, like, just a routine, a regular occurrence, and, you know, this has been going on for a long time, and this is just how all the citizens live down there. I didn't necessarily get a sense right from THX 1138, but, you know, that was Jamie King who did that voice.
Really? I actually didn't know.
Yeah, I think she said that on the Ustream chat. I'm not sure where she said that.
I don't think it was a Ustream chat. I was there. I was reminded of THX 1138 because that monotone voice that's in THX said those, it wasn't the same words, but something repetitively said one sentence over and over again. That's why I thought of that.
I actually haven't seen THX 1138. I'm sorry. I should probably watch it. I just haven't got around to watching it.
Just don't watch it in rainy day. You'll be very depressed.
Right.
Not lying, it's a weird movie.
Alright, so now we're going to go to the cantina on Coruscant. I just thought it really kind of... It was the prequel version of the cantina from episode 4. That's just my initial thoughts.
It was very similar to the one that you see in episode 2. And that's not coincidental. I mean, I think I saw Dave saying somewhere that he modeled it after that in terms of just the feel. It's really, I mean, it's a classic move. You have the heroes go to a really seedy place and they find the information they need and they run into trouble. I mean, it's done everywhere, but the lighting, the sounds, just the variety of different species that you see really helped make this a standout location as far as the Clone Wars locations go.
Yeah.
Were you guys looking for an actual fight to break up between Ahsoka, Plo, and then the other guys there? Were you guys hoping for a fight, or just...
Well,
were you happy with what Ahsoka did and she threw the credits?
Well, it wasn't too bad. I mean, I thought what happened was suitable, you know? They don't want to draw too much attention to themselves. And
yeah, within the context of the episode, they didn't do anything. I mean, they didn't do anything I wouldn't expect them to do. They needed to get out of there. They didn't want to just kill random people just because those people had taken a liking to picking a fight with them. I guess the fight would have been cool, but not within what the episode was going for.
Yeah.
I was kind of looking for an Obi-Wan move from A New Hope. I was kind of hoping Bo-Koon would cut off one of their arms or something.
Yeah, going back, they just don't want to draw too much attention to themselves, and it's not really their prime directive.
Plo Koon even says to be subtle.
Mm-hmm. And that scene where Plo Koon goes over to the bartender and asks him for information, and he just slams his lightsaber on the bar, I thought that was really awesome.
You think that the bartender ever gave him information, or just they just stare at each other? Because he didn't really say anything besides, it's been a while since you Jedi came here, something like that.
Well, didn't they cut away from that right at that point?
Yeah, they did.
I think the bartender probably told him stuff, or just said, I really honestly don't know anything. But obviously it didn't lead anywhere, because they didn't really find anything they needed from the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
That was the fifth bar they went to also. I remember Ahsoka saying that.
Yeah.
Scum bucket drinking hole, that she called it.
Alright, so now it's Plo Koon and Ahsoka's arrival on Florum. And I got a very spaghetti western feel from it. The camera angles, to the music, to the, that, you know, kind of dusty and windy sound design. What about you guys?
Yeah. What did you think of Hondo being kind of neutral in the whole thing?
Well, he's been defeated by a Jedi twice, so he probably just wants to stick out of it now.
Yeah, I got the sense that he was tired of always getting messed up whenever he interacts with the Jedi. And you even see that at the end, he warns Boba not to interfere with them or to do anything that would anger them, because he's been there, he's done that, and that's really what contributes to the hostages being saved.
Hang on, I have to go back for a minute. There's a scene in the Florum Cantina where Hondo is asking Aura about the downed gunship on Vancor, and she doesn't tell him anything. Why not?
Probably because Hondo might tell the Jedi that it was her. That it was Lan or something. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure. They kind of already know that it was her, so...
Why do you think, Eric?
I'm not exactly sure. I mean, yeah, I would tend to agree with that interpretation, but it's possible that it's just one of the things we'll just have to speculate about. I didn't feel like it was explained very well in the episode, or that there was really a clear reason. I think it was just sort of a minor incident.
And she tells him to stay away from it too, and then it's crawling with Republic troops. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
I just remembered something from R2 Come Home. Did you guys think the rescue of Anakin and Mace was a little bit quick? I mean, it just shows the clones go in there, and 2 seconds later they come out with Anakin and Mace.
Well, they were right at the edge of the opening where the gunship appeared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that there was more than two ropes that Ahsoka cut. Like, there was like four ropes attached to the ship, but Ahsoka only cut two. Do you think, like, Plo Koon cut the other two?
I remember that shot not being very wide. It's possible we just didn't see Plo Koon as he was cutting the other two. I think we were just meant to believe that that was what happened.
The big showdown between Ahsoka, Plo Koon, Boba, and Aura. I thought it still had a spaghetti western feel, as did this whole episode. And in the Attack of the Clones bonus features, George Lucas says that the Jedi are marshals in the Old West, and I thought that this was really emphasized in this scene in particular.
Yeah, I like that scene because everything happened really fast, and you got the sense that Aura and Boba, I mean, you knew they were expecting something, but you got the sense that they were, at any moment, they knew something could go down. And then that's why it was even more impressive that Aura and Plo Koon were able to essentially win, because they got what they needed. They caught Boba, and they eventually got him to reveal where Aura was keeping the hostages. So, you know, that was it was a cool scene even before the fight started, because you saw Plo Koon trying to convince Boba to leave Aura and help them out.
Do you think it was cowardly of Aura to leave Boba there? Or do you think she just knew that if she tried to save him, she would have been caught too?
Well, she's a bounty hunter. She trusts no one, and she tries to save her own skin. I think what she did was what any bounty hunter would do.
Yeah, it was a tactical decision.
Do you think that Aura has anything personal from the Jedi, or does she just want money from the Separatists?
Ooh, that was a lot of expanded universe stuff.
Well, according to the EU, she does have something against the Jedi, but I think it's fine for the Clone Wars to just make it seem like she wants the money, realizes that Boba Fett can be a really powerful ally later on, and manipulates everything to keep Boba on her side. But yes, in the EU, there is something to suggest that she is out for vengeance.
Mm-hmm. She knew Jango Fett, and she knows that Boba was trained by Jango Fett, and he is a clone of Jango Fett, so he has all the skills that Jango will have, so I think that's why she is using him.
Yeah.
Because he can be really good on her crew.
Yeah, and once she sees that Boba Fett is not going to stay around with her, even if she does rescue him, you know, once she sees that Plo Koon is starting to get to him, that's another reason why she decides to abandon him. Not just because she doesn't think she can do it, but because she thinks he might have turned already. And from what we see, he has turned quite a bit, at least for now.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like when they're kind of holding each other's mentors hostage. I thought it was kind of powerful, you know, because in the beginning of Lethal Trackdown, it states that Aura is Boba's mentor. And then throughout the episodes of, like, season one, you kind of get that Ahsoka's mentor is Plo Koon. And it's just...
I think there's a special bond between Plo and Ahsoka because Plo was the one that found Ahsoka when she was an infant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then, speaking of, like, what you said, like, it's a really quick fight scene. And then there's, like, that build-up to it. That's also kind of reminiscent of a spaghetti western. Like, in Good, Bad, and the Ugly, there's, like, an 8-minute scene where they're just staring at each other before someone actually pulls their guns out and shoots. What do you think about the destruction of the Slave One?
Well, I'm not entirely convinced that it's destroyed. I think it's badly damaged. Because I don't know how they could easily, I guess, build... or how Boba could easily build a second one. Also, they're both called Slave One. Although we don't actually—I don't know if we hear Slave One in the movie. So it could be that that's actually Slave Two. Although I really doubt that because the literature calls it Slave One. But anyway, so I don't think that it was destroyed. I think it was badly damaged. I like that they left Aurra Sing's fate. Unless you saw the trailer for season 3, you think that she might have died.
Yeah.
Within the G-level canon, even though she comes back later in the EU. But, I mean, obviously, we know she's not dead. But I like that that Ahsoka looked up and sort of looked regretful that it had to end that way. And that fits in with the whole mission was to preserve as many lives as possible. I mean, Ahsoka, you had to think that they wanted to capture both Ahsoka, I mean, Aurra and Boba alive. Now, they got Boba, but... clearly, Ahsoka was very regretful that she had to kill Aurra,
yeah.
Or so she thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe there's, like, another reason why they went to Florum is to, like, so they can sort of bring back the Slave One, because if you look in their camp, on the pirates' camp, there's a lot of, like, salvaging stuff and stuff like that, and Hondo could easily go over there and bring back Boba's ship and repair it and stuff.
I think that there was a pretty big explosion, which makes me think that for some reason they might have actually destroyed it. Probably not beyond repair, but the ship probably fell apart to a significant degree. But I would like to see, maybe towards the end of the whole series, just some scenes that prepare us for the movies, like maybe Hondo continuing to work on the ship. If Boba is free at that point, he can come back to Hondo and be like, hey, can I have that again? You know, just that kind of thing would be cool.
Yeah, it would be. And, yeah, I did get that sense of regret that Ahsoka did kill Aurra. But, yeah, like you said in the Season 3 trailer, you can kind of see her, I think it's her. But it could be, like, one of those things, since the music in that trailer is very reminiscent of the Dagobah scene. Like, when Luke is in the cave, Darth Vader, or the supposed Darth Vader, encounters Luke. It could be, like, sort of that thing, that kind of thing.
You guys already discussed the fate of the Slave One.
Yeah, but we'd like to hear your thoughts, too.
Well, I think it survived. I mean, it's obviously an Empire Strikes Back, so...
lost Eric again. That was fast.
Yeah.
Alright, so that final, like, confrontation between Mace and Boba, what did you think of that? Because I thought that it just needed to be a little longer. Not necessarily an action sequence, but just, like, them talking to each other about their problems with each other would have been nice.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to see more just because it would have been cool to hear more of Mace's sort of lecture, but first of all, they only have 22 minutes, and second of all, it was succinct. So, you know, you got out of that everything. I mean, the way I look at it is, if you can understand the whole conversation and every sort of aspect of the conversation from the dialogue that you get, they don't need to put more in, although more would be fine. And I feel like we know exactly what Mace and Boba would have talked about if they kept going. I mean, we got the gist of their argument. Mace says, you got to let this go about Jango. I did what I had to do. Boba says, I'm not going to accept that. He's my dad. I'm going to get you. And we got enough of that feeling from the conversation that they did have. And it was quick. It was punchy. You know, we got a few lines of dialogue, and then they walked Boba away, and that felt right to me.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of get a sense of completion there, but yeah. There's still that.
Do you think life is what kind of leads Boba into being the lonesome guy in Empire Strikes Back? You think him and Boss get out together and they get in a fight and then Boba go a separate ways or what?
So I think that, you know, you're made who you are because of the situation that you're in. You could say that Boba and Bosk become almost friends at one point. They work together well, and then something happens, and Boba says, I really just can't trust anybody, it seems. And then he strikes out on his own. I could see that.
Yeah. And maybe Bosk sort of blames him for getting caught, since Boba did disclose the location of where Bosk was hiding out. You know, it kind of turned him in. So maybe they're just kind of... Maybe they're really not friends at all during their time in Republic prison.
Do you think they're going to show them break out in Clone Wars, or is that just going to be a mystery? I hope to see more Boba.
We should see more, but not too much.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see, like, one more episode, maybe in, like, season 4 of him breaking out, but not on, like, a monthly basis.
We know that Aura survived, though, because in the season 3 trailer, you see your, like, a glimpse of her. If you pause it at, I think it's 23 seconds.
22 or 23.
Yeah, so she survived, obviously. And you think she'll be working with Cad Bane again? So we saw Cad Bane too in that trailer.
Well, that's what kind of...
Yeah, I think they could work together more, but I don't. I sort of want to see them separate, almost competing maybe at times. That would be kind of interesting.
That's what kind of confused me.
I can see Cad Bane
or
them breaking out Boba and Bosk.
Well,
like they did with Zero.
Well, that's what kind of confused me.
I kind of want Boba to break out on his own. I wish that would happen, just because it would give us a chance to see Boba making all of his own decisions, doing everything for himself. You know, he might not even... If Aura broke him out, people could say Boba didn't want to leave. He was considering changing his mind. But if Boba breaks out all on his own, there's no question about his motives. There's no question about his intentions.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that kind of confused...
Maybe he gets out...
All right, one thing that kind of confused me is that when Aura was working for Cad Bane, I mean, that kind of confused me because she seems like she always wants to be in control and, you know, the leader of whatever crew that she's in. And why do you think that she would take sort of like second in command to Cad Bane?
To be the leader, but she also wants to do what's best for her in the end. And if she thought that she could gain something important or big from working with Cad Bane, maybe either overthrowing him or just getting rich, she's going to do it. I mean, she doesn't have to worry about her image, right? People know that she is a fearsome bounty hunter. So if she works for somebody, nobody's going to accuse her of going soft or not being a capable leader. In fact, they're probably going to be more worried that she has something up her sleeve.
All right, so any last thoughts on Lethal Jackdown or any of the episodes?
I got nothing. Do you, Eric?
It was a good way to end the season. It did feel a little rushed at the end, but I can accept that because they had to fit so much in. If these were, you know, hour-long shows, I think they could do a lot more. But I'm not complaining. I think we got enough from each individual episode and from them together to get a picture of, you know, what the galaxy looks like, and also to get a sense very specifically of what Dave Filoni was trying to accomplish. To me, it doesn't matter if he fits everything in. It matters if he makes us see what he wants us to see.
Yeah.
And he did that.
Yeah, I have the same opinion. I thought Dave did a great job, even though it was kind of rushed. And I just thought that it really completed this cliffhanger from Attack of the Clones of Boba's story and his attempt on revenge at Mace Windu.
Yeah.
All I can say is I want more, like Daniel Logan does, like he said that on Twitter. I want more. Already seeing that three-part story.
Mm-hmm. All right, so is that everybody's last thoughts on the episodes?
I think so.
As you wish.
I don't work for free.
He's no good to me, Dad.
I make the rules now.
What if he doesn't survive? He's worth a lot to me.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox, and is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and character, or any other Star Wars-related items are the registered trademarks of Lucasfilm or the respective trademark or copyright holders.